Hey you guys, welcome back to Tomes of Terror. So man, have I mentioned how much I love it when I just kind of pick a book completely at random on Kindle Unlimited and it ends up being one of the best things that I've read all year. If I haven't mentioned that, I'm mentioning it right now. It just makes me so happy to discover a new writer and something like this good that I didn't know existed before. Now, I happened to choose this particular book from my little list of recommendations just for three reasons. The cover is gorgeous. The title actually kind of intrigued me. And I saw like a little blurb next to it that it had won the Ladies of Horror Fiction Award for Best Novella of 2020. And I was looking for something a little bit shorter because I'd kind of gotten behind in my book reading and needed to read something that wasn't all that long so I could get a review put up. So I was like, ooh, best novella, I'm here. So the author of this book, Mona Kabani, is a young woman. She's, I believe she's Lebanese immigrant. She's living in New York City. And though she's written a couple of novels since then, this book, The Bell Chime, which came out in 2020, was her first published work. And that blows my fucking mind because the writing in this is just so, I mean, it's just so beautifully written. It's so self-assured, and it's actually like really, really unsettling, like really, really creepy. And I can hardly believe that this was produced by a first-time author. I mean, that's just blows me away. Now, I would actually suggest going into this story completely blind, as I did. All you need to know about it, if you want to read it, is it's a psychological horror that kind of uses like night terrors as a jumping off point, and that it's not told in a linear fashion, but is nonetheless like pretty easy to follow. And it's also like really easy to get completely absorbed in, even though it's not hugely, hugely long, but it's just like a really, I don't know, it's just like a really immersive experience, or at least I found it that. Now, if you continue listening to this video past this sentence, some plot points might be revealed that you don't want to know. It's really, really hard to talk about this book without talking about some of the stuff that happens in it. I'm not going to spoil the ending or say what, you know, what exactly is going on and stuff like that, but to talk about it, I am going to have to like reveal some plot points. And as I said, I would just suggest going into this not knowing anything about it like I did. So if you're not going to read it, you know, or if you've already read it and you want to go ahead and listen, then you can. But I'm just like warning you right now that, you know, it's better going into it if you don't know anything about it. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. So I don't know if I'd actually go so far as to call the book meta, but it does actually start with the author, she's like a foreword, and she is describing her own experiences with night terrors. And she says how a psychologist told her that one thing that she could do was like set an alarm for the middle of the night so that when she has a night terror and the alarm wakes her up, she needs to immediately write it down. Because he's saying, well, if you keep doing that, then it kind of like takes their power away. So she says this is where the germ of the idea for the bell chime came from. It was one of these night terrors that she woke up in the middle of the night and like wrote down. And actually in the afterword, she has like her notes there, like exactly what had happened in the dream that she woke up and then she wrote it down. So she does actually tell you at the end, like exactly what it was and like why it gave her an idea for this story. So when we get into the story proper, we're following an initially unnamed woman. Now, she wakes up at the beginning and she seems to be encased in some kind of bag, like almost like a body bag or something like that. And she's laying on a cold metal table. And there's somebody hovering over her who sort of looks like their head is deformed. And they're asking her repeatedly if she can hear the bell chime. Now, when she says that she can, I mean, she's obviously like terrified and it's really hot and she's sweating inside of this bag and everything like that. But she says she can hear it. And then she's suddenly subjected to like excruciating pain. Like it's like it feels like somebody is kind of like burying their arms like into her ribs and like pulling her ribs apart and stuff like that. Like horrible, horrible pain. So then she wakes up from what was presumably a nightmare. She's in her apartment in Manhattan, and there's her concerned and very, very attractive, muscle-bound, kind of perfect boyfriend, Dexter, is there comforting her. So we learn that the protagonist is a very successful novelist. In the term, there's kind of like a throwaway thing later where she gets a phone call, and it's like, you know, some book deal is like $2 million, something like that. So, you know what I mean? So she's like a very successful novelist. And her boyfriend, like I said, is kind of seemingly perfect. You know, he's beautiful looking. It's like he always smells like roses. He's, you know, he's totally on her wavelength and knows what she's thinking all the time and stuff like that. So she's got all that going on, but she's also plagued quite often by these terrible nightmares, and maybe we're led to believe is a little bit mentally fragile because of some unspoken issues or something that happened in the past. So when she wakes up, it's Sunday morning, and Dexter is making breakfast, but they're out of bacon, you know, can't have that. So the protagonist, whose name we actually don't learn until later, but is actually Lauren, so that's what I'm going to call her from now on, even though you don't find that out until later in the book, she says, oh, I'll just pop down to the little grocery store across the street to get some. On her way out of the building, though, she sees this flyer that somebody has posted, like, on the window glass of the door, like, from the building, like, out into the street. It's a missing persons flyer, but the photo on it is of her, but not quite. Like, it is her, but in the photo, she looks, like, insane or, like, demonic. And she's like, I never posed for that picture. So where did whoever makes, like, where did they get that? And she's like, I wouldn't even be able to make my face look like that if I tried to. So she's like really, really unnerved about it. So like I said, I love stories that start out with weird shit like that. I mean, that's like such a great, intriguing premise that you're just kind of like, what the fuck? Like, where is this going to go like from now on? So she's obviously very freaked out, and she's also really mad because she thinks somebody's, like, fucking with her, right? So she takes the flyer back into the apartment and shows Dexter, her boyfriend. Now, he doesn't take it all that seriously, but he does come up with the somewhat reasonable explanation that maybe a weird fan of hers or a hater maybe put it there as a prank, like they photoshopped a picture of her and then put it there like to get under her skin, because like I said, in, you know, in the context of the story, she's supposedly this big famous writer, so she has like a big fan base, so he's like, maybe it was just somebody like that just to try to like fuck with you. So Lauren is somewhat mollified by this, but she's like still pretty unnerved by the fact. She's like, look, I didn't pose for that picture, and yeah, I know Photoshop is a thing, but you know, that's me, and I don't know how they would have photoshopped me to, like, look like that. And as the story is going on, she also starts to suspect that maybe her, you were led to believe her delicate hold on sanity might be crumbling once again, because it's, she says, or she thinks things to the effect of, like, it's happening again or something like that. And this suspicion is heightened by the fact that she's sure that the eyes of the photo are, like, moving and, like, following her around, like, they're watching her. And she also, like, later on, she throws the flyer away at one point because it's freaking her out, but it somehow returns, like, kind of gets itself out of the garbage and stuff. And what's worse, another one appears where the photo of her looks, it's her, but it looks, like, horribly, horribly, like, unutterably sad, like, not demonic like the other one. And from that point on, Lauren starts to hear this bell chime invading her waking life, like from her dream, like, can you hear the bell chime? And she starts to see even more terrible things that may or may not be hallucinations. At about a quarter of the way through the story, Lauren wakes up inside the bag and on the metal table from her dream again. And the actual truth of her situation, like, starts to become much clearer from there on out. Now, as I mentioned, the bell chime jumps back and forth in the timeline and skates between reality and nightmares. But in spite of all that, it remains completely lucid and very, very simple to follow the entire time. I had zero trouble following what was going on or anything like that. It's very, I mean, the clarity is just, like, is really, really good. So new information gets revealed with every section and every sort of journey into the past and into the dream world. And it all, in the end, it just all comes together really, really seamlessly. Like, you really get a sense of, like, what was happening. Now, I have seen a couple of reviewers that compared this story to maybe, like, something you'd see on Black Mirror. And that's a pretty fair comparison, I'd say, although The Bell Chime is actually set in the present day, and it doesn't really have any science fiction trappings or any particular focus on technology, so, like, in that way, it's sort of not like that. But this is really just purely psychological horror at its finest, and at its most real, too. I mean, you can really tell just by reading this that the author has probably experienced many of the frightening emotions and visions that she describes, even if it was only in her dreams. Like, it comes across as, like, very genuine. So the overarching theme of the story, which is very succinctly summed up in the book's last sentence, is, what would you abandon for happiness? And that is definitely a question that you will probably be asking yourself for quite a while after you have finished reading this book. This is definitely one of those stories that is going to stick with you and is going to, like, haunt your thoughts from time to time, like, as you kind of go about your life. And, I mean, the imagery that she was able to conjure up through her use of language is, like, so vivid, and it's just, like, really all-encompassing. Like, all her use of metaphor and similar, it's just, like, gorgeous. And the way she conveys, like, the mood and the emotion, I mean, just, like, really incredible. I mean, just the way, like I said, it's just beautifully, beautifully written. It really is very, very evocative. So I'm going to say, like, Mona Cabani, she's undoubtedly going to be a writer to watch in coming years. And I'm actually really excited to read more of her stuff, because this was just exquisite. I mean, this was really, really good. And as far as I know, I think she's written at least two more novels, maybe three. One of them is called Vanilla. A lot of people had recommended that one, like, said that one was really good. So I will eventually, like, get around to reading that one as well, because I really, really like this a lot. I mean, it's creepy, it's beautifully written, and it was just such a unique story that, I mean, you know, it's not, everything's been done, but the way that she came at it was just, like, really, really unique, and I really, really dug it. So if you have Kindle Unlimited, then you can read it on there for free, or obviously you can purchase the paperback if you would rather do that. But yeah, I definitely recommend this one, especially if you're real into, like, psychological horror, like, nightmarish kind of, I don't necessarily want to call it surrealistic, but it does have, like, a nightmarish, like, angle to it. So yeah, definitely recommend it if you like that kind of thing. And that will do it for this Tomes of Terror. I will see you guys again on the next one. Bye.